live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
First of two Monday Night Football games going to kick off here in just a couple minutes. Texans minus -3 against the Buccaneers. 56% of the cash on H-Town. 43% of the tickets. Okay, interesting. I would probably take the points here with the Buccaneers. Like you said, anything could happen. I kind of like the Bucs for the season overall. I do worry about the Texans. I think there was a regression to the mean last year with C.J. Stroud. Their O-line is not great. I am probably the only person in the world who said this now. But I did get into some discussions on the show that in the AFC South, I thought the Colts had a shot to win the division, and I got laughed at. But I still think the Colts are going to be a pretty good team. And I'm not crowing now, you know, because they got kind of a robbery win yesterday. I just don't think the Texans are that good. I think they're about a 500 team.
Well, and Jacksonville's already proven through two games they're not that good either. So I Indy definitely live. At three, I would only take Tampa Bay in this first game that's going right now, just about get underway in Houston.
Mega Monday, that means the big 50-ounce drinks here at the front yard. You get two for one. Also, happy hour goes until 7 o'clock Monday through Friday. $5 on the craft drafts. They're awesome. I like the Hefeweizen here. $7 cocktails and wine. And then $7 bites. What are the bites? That's our appetizers. Or as they're calling them, shareables. You can take advantage of the hummus plate, the bacon mac and cheese. And when I tell you, folks, like when we do shows at places, and I swear by it, I really do, because I hang out at places like Ellis Island, and their bacon, chef's kiss. They serve so much bacon, they have their own pork supplier, seriously, at Ellis Island.
Beautiful.
For this, and then, you know, 15-plus village pubs around the valley. But, yeah, bacon, mac, and cheese, highly recommend that one. Fried pickles, cauliflower wings, pork belly bites. It's dynamite. I have not tried the wings yet, but they changed up the formula on that. They're now house smoked wings. If you want to make them dirty, then you can get them tossed in buffalo sauce and topped with crumbled blue cheese. Get a little celery to get your dirty smoked wings. All right, it is Big Four time. Let's do it.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Reminder, special guest, Gary Lawless from VGK is going to be joining us. We'll have about 30 minutes of football talk with Gary because he is a better, and he was a guy who covers football in Canada, loves the NFL, likes college football. So Gary's coming up in just a little bit. Jeff Parles, South Point Studios, is here. Are you a Paul Finebaum guy?
Not really. My one interaction with Finebaum ever came at the 2013 SEC Championship game. He totally blew me off.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think most of his stuff now is kind of performative, kind of hot take, hot shot. He's jumping ship now when it comes to Arch Manning. Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks. And he's one of the guys who hyped him up. So, you know, Arch has become this victim of kind of vicious criticism because of guys like Paul Finebaum and guys around the SEC. I'm not giving up on Arch Manning. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. Can he be a first-round pick down the road? Yes. He could be a first-round pick this year. It's a long season. Things haven't worked out. A lot of people are actually blaming Sark for a lack of offensive cohesion because he's calling the plays. What do you think, Arch?
Ugly so far, right? He'll be fine. It just that hype machine was so out of control. And also, too, I just wonder, for a kid that young, just first year as a starter, all this hype, his last name doesn't help him either in this circumstance. How you have an awful game week one against arguably the best defense in the country in their house. I just wonder how you recover mentally from that. He'll be fine. He's just going to stay at Texas one extra year. That's all it's going to be. Instead of coming out this year, he'll come out next year.
I will ask, when will we learn at the beginning of a college football season to stop anointing someone the number one pick, or even a first-round pick? Did Shedeur Sanders not teach everyone? And then the great thing about Shedeur is he was overhyped, and we just went with the same stupid narrative all the way through the college football season into the draft, and everyone's like, fifth round! Oh, my God! This is shocking! It wasn't, and I will point out again, I did have a bet that I made in September last year with a friend in the Denver area who follows Colorado, and I said Shador would not be a first-round pick. Now, the funny thing is now people hear that, and they're like, oh, some bet. Like, no, no, no. No one else was willing to say that on radio or take the bet. And I'm telling you, with Arch Manning, Arch could stay three freaking years for all we know. By the way, Carson Beck was left for dead last year. Now he's one of the Heisman frontrunners, and he might be a first-round pick.
Did any of us think Cam Ward was going to be the first overall pick, even at the beginning of last year? No way. Cam Ward was a fifth-round pick going before he got to Miami. It changes all the time. And the answer to your initial question, we will never learn to not anoint someone going into the season. And that's what that point we made. I made to Steve of like John Mateer. We thought he was going to be a good quarterback. He's the Heisman favorite right now.
I'll give you a very small example, and that's the problem with. College football is so regional, and, you know, I often say in the Mountain Time Zone and the West, but especially in Vegas, we're like Sports Siberia. These guys can't stay up at night. They can't watch the games. I mean, my Lord, if I heard one more just horrendous thing about how awful Cal and Stanford were going to be this year, and then no one paid attention to West Coast recruiting, this kid, Senga Pelatele, went back and forth between Oregon over and over again. What do you think Oregon was offering him? Because I'm guessing about $800,000 a year. He decided, hey, I don't know what his decision was, but I'm sure Cal put up some money, and he was going to get the play. And then everyone's like, is anyone seeing this guy? Yeah, Cal and Oregon fought over him for a year. Like, I don't think a lot of people thought he would be this good, but he's good. But a lot of people are like, Cal over Minnesota? This is shocking. Is it? Pay attention. Watch game.
That was another one where I thought all week, the wrong team was favored all week. Who cares that Minnesota beat Northwestern State by 900,000 points? Who cares? And I'm with you with JSK. He has been so good so far for Cal. I was stunned Stanford beat Boston College. But, hey, look, they need one more win to get over the win total now for the Cardinals.
Damn, I guess Hawaii isn't terrible. I had retweeted Eric McLean, who played at Clemson and is an ACC expert, and he's like, oh my God, power four team losing to Hawaii. I'm not saying Hawaii's great, but they're not terrible. And Stanford wasn't ready that day, and hey, traveling to Hawaii is not easy.
Number three.
We've talked a lot on this show, Jeff. Jeff Parles is with us from South Point Studios. We've talked a lot on this show about flag football and the Olympics and what flag football is going to be. And I think it's pretty clear that the NFL is very much behind it, and they believe they can make a lot of money off of flag football, which sadly means that I think a lot of the guys who've been playing flag football are not going to be on the U.S. flag football team. It's going to be an NFL-laden team. Well, anyway, there's money to be made. Mm-hmm. And Tom Brady announced over at Allegiant Stadium this afternoon around 2 o'clock that he's partnering with Fanatics, and they're going to have a flag football classic with a bunch of big-name players. Mostly former players, some current, and lots of current, actually. Saquon Barkley, CeeDee Lamb, Christian McCaffrey, Sauce Gardner, Myles Garrett, Brock Bowers, Max Crosby, Tyreek Hill, Odell Beckham, Gronk. Three teams of 8 players, round-robin tournament. So, yeah, the old guys, the current guys, they're going to play flag football. It's going to be in Saudi Arabia. Cha-ching, right? There's money to be made. Let's do it.
Well, that's all about the green. That's all it is there. And I think you're right, too, with the I was still surprised that the NFL was so gung-ho to allow their players to play in what... Look, I understand you're playing for your country, you're playing for a gold medal. It's an exhibition. It's a glorified exhibition.
By the way, the NFL is gung-ho.
Yes.
If I own a team and I've got a guy making whatever, $25 million a year, he ain't playing for, you know, God bless USA, he ain't playing.
It's the same thing with the World Baseball Classic in baseball, though, where, I mean, geez, the Mets lost the whole season on Edwin Diaz because of that. So, yeah, I'm surprised that the league is so forward. I'm with you, though. If I own a team, no way.
Number two. How whiny is Kansas City? What a bunch of pansies. The whiniest market before this in the NFL were the New Englanders, because anything you said about the Patriots, they were like, oh, we're offended. Deal with a couple of losses without becoming crybabies about the tush push. When I started to see that got momentum yesterday, I'm like, are we going to do this again? Because Philly used the tush push, threw for 101 yards, wound up taking care of you pretty easily, and now we've got this whole thing like, look at the film, this is illegal. They're illegal motion on every play. Really, we got to do this again, Jeff?
Oh, it's complete nonsense. Look, on the replays, you saw they missed some false starts. But you know what? The Eagles have perfected a play. They have perfected it. Find a way to stop it. I can't believe what Schefter said this morning on Get Up, legitimately blaming the vote, that this game was not lost on the field yesterday. It was lost in the boardroom when the league owners decided to keep the tush push around. Complete nonsense. Stop the play. Find a way to do it. The Eagles have perfected a play. Someone else perfect the play, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, they're going to get rid of it after this.
Oh, I don't even think there's a doubt at this point that it's gone. But you know what? Look, this may just sound macho more so than anything, but find a way to be better at them at their perfect play. Find a way to beat them on that. Kansas City stopped it two times yesterday, too. That's the funny part of it. They stopped it twice. It's just that they were at a second and one, so they were able to run it three times at the end.
Chiefs were clowns yesterday. Video at the end of the game. Chris Jones talking trash at Hurts. Like, you didn't throw for 100 yards, and Hurts said the perfect thing. Yeah. Scoreboard.
We won.
We won, jackass.
Yeah.
So shut the hell up. And then, I mentioned it. We did, like 15 minutes ago. Guys in the locker room, led by Travis Kelce, wearing a free Rashi Wright t-shirt.
Oh, my goodness.
He got a 6-game suspension. Do I think it's too much? Maybe. I hate the judge, jury, executioner thing from Roger Goodell. He shouldn't be overseeing any of this. But let's not act like he is some, victim of, political difficulties. Rashi Rice is paying a price for something he did. Why are we wearing t-shirts? And I think it's a bigger story about that club lacking a little bit of leadership. And I know people get driven nuts when you say Andy Reid sometimes runs a loose ship, but he does. When everything is going well and it's winning time, then it's fine. But whether it's Kelce or other people who feel like Rashi Rice is a victim, cut it out, guys.
Just a basic lack of self-awareness. That's just all it is, more so than anything. And, we haven't seen in this Mahomes era with this group things go. This is the first time they're 0-2. They barely have lost two games in a row at any point. Can you imagine what will happen if the Giants pull off the upset on Sunday night against them? I don't see that happening. But, boy, Kansas City, they're not a good football team right now. And I'm with you. I mean, and Kelce skipped out on the media as well.
Number one.
I'll push back on Kansas City's not a good football team. I think they're fine.
Right now, they're not.
I think they're still good enough to win 10 or 11 games. And I think a lot of what... a big part of what led them to a 15-2 record a year ago and winning ways the year before is those coin flip games. They made all the plays.
Mm-hmm.
They made their breaks. Remember, going into the Charger game, I mean, one of the more incredible stats I've ever seen in the NFL. Chiefs had won 17 straight games with one score decisions.
Yeah.
17 in a row in games that were 8 or less. They'd won 9 in a row where the decision with 3 points or less. I mean, that's going
unheard
to turn,
of.
Jeff.
Unheard of. And it's 0-2.
Eventually, it's going to be, that's going to be 50-50 in a year, or you're going to be on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, 0-2. 0-2 with the touchdown, or with six or more now this year.
We got 30 seconds here. Let's start building this one. If you didn't hear, Joe Burrow is down. The Bengals could be in big trouble here. Joe Burrow's out for 3 months. It definitely changes the AFC North picture, which then would technically change the AFC picture. You got like 15 seconds. Give me some initial thoughts on what happens now in the AFC. The Bengals don't look like they can be more than a 9-win team.
Yeah, Bengals are done, and the biggest winner of that is going to be the winner of tonight's game between the Raiders and the Chargers. That's my take on the Burrow injury.
It does open the door for that, maybe that last or the second to last wild card spot. All right, 7-0 early. Texans on top of the Buccaneers. We'll get into the AFC odds now that Burrow is down probably for most of the season, out 3 months.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
Texans out to a 7-0 start, but Buccaneers moving pretty quickly down the field. Baker Mayfield with three straight really good passes on the heels of a pass that he had Emeka Ogbuka. Pretty open for a touchdown and underthrew him by like 4 yards, which is very weird because he's got a freaking cannon. I don't know, man. If you're out there right now, I don't want to jump the gun because these games are long games, but this number got bet down and the total was 42.5. They're going up and down the field.
So far, no resistance.
No.
And that touchdown catch by Nico Collins on the opening drive is as good as you will see this year in the NFL. But Look, we'll see. I expected a little more from Houston's defense, and it has not showed anything so far.
There's a touchdown on this play, I'll bet you.
Okay.
Let's see what they run here.
Well, if you throw
go up top. Look for Evans. Go up top. The pump fake. Up middle of the field. Let's see. Now look at that.
Which Miller is that?
All right, so touchdown on a 20-yard pass. Now the only reason is that my scoreboard's in real time. And I look down right when you were talking, and I'm like, okay, six. I'm going to guarantee a touchdown on this one.
What was Ryan Miller anytime touchdown on in this game?
Right, yeah.
That's a heck of a price.
There you go. Okay, I'm going to take you – well, first, you know what? I want to find out what you played yesterday in the NFL, because I'm going to take it on a path of what I played, and I don't do this because I think anyone cares about what I played. It's kind of to set up what I saw and what happened in these games. What'd you get on yesterday?
Won on New England. Fortunate. Lost horribly on our Jets. Probably stupid.
Why?
That I even...
That was one...
Yeah.
I mean, now it's easy for me to say, because I didn't put it in contest.
Yeah.
But that was one where, going in, I'm like, the Bills are going to... They're going to be able to win this game by 7 or 10 points. What convinced you that the Bills... Or at least the Jets would be able to stay within handling distance. I'm not trying to rub it in.
No, I know it's all good. Hey, look, I'm wrong plenty. That's one thing that everyone
will. We lose bets.
Yeah, we lose bets. It happens to all of us. You know, I just thought that with the way the Jets ran the ball in week one and how soft Buffalo's defense has been historically against the run, I thought the Jets would be able to do that again. I was very wrong. And as soon as Michael Clemens roughing the passer on Josh Allen happened on the first Buffalo drive, we knew right away, all right, this is going to be a bad day. And then,
One more on the Jets. Yeah. I hate to say it, but there were moments yesterday they did look disorganized and kind of look poorly coached, which I didn't expect with Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, they. You know, I'm getting Mike Singletary vibes, which is not good. Which
really?
Is not good. Yeah,
like in over his head, really.
Yeah, like we're preaching discipline, preaching hard-nosed, and then the team just is completely undisciplined and has no idea what they're doing.
How about preach, stop fumbling?
Well, that would be a
or
good
preach,
one.
Preach, no fumbling.
No fumbling. No fumbling. Just stop fumbling. Just don't fumble at all. Don't fumble at all. And then I was all over Atlanta last night, and I thought we were talking off the air about this. I think the Falcons have 11-win talent. I just don't trust their coaching at all. And Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, of course, former Jet interim head coach and defensive coordinator, put together an amazing game plan last night, and those young pass rushers looked so good. But those are the three big ones I had yesterday. 2-1, we'll take that any day of the week.
You like Penix?
I do. I do. I know that everyone was – it was always too old – which, all right, if the guy can play at a quarterback, he's still going to play for 15 years, even if he's coming out at 25 years old. So, yeah, I like Penix. And Bijan is just so good. I mean, it's good to see them finally utilizing him correctly. He is just such an elite talent.
Favorites yesterday in the NFL were 9-4 straight up, 7-6 ATS. Overs dominated at 10-3. Some of my players, and I had lots of losers, but one of the winners I had in contest, and this is a very public play, because you look at it, you're like, Saints, only 3 with the Niners. I got to tell you, I felt fortunate to get the cover, and I wasn't blown away by the Niners.
I haven't been blown away by the Niners in either game so far. On the New Orleans end of things, they are terrible. There's no arguing that, but they look well coached. They've been plucky through these first two games. They're probably going to go 3-14 or 4-13, but they're going to be a hard out every single week. I think that's been my bigger takeaway from that. And, you know, Mac Jones did look pretty good yesterday, though. That's one thing with San Francisco. Even though they haven't been overly impressive in their wins, I still love Kyle Shanahan. And, look, we saw Robert Saleh was not a good NFL head coach, but the man is a great defensive coordinator.
Look ahead to week 3. Seahawks are 7.5 at home against the Saints. Is this where we see this 3-14 Saints team show up and just get run off the field?
I would say so, because they're going to really struggle to move the ball in that game, because Seattle's defense through two games has looked very much the part that a lot of people expected them to be, top 5 defense. They were great yesterday, even though Seattle took advantage of one of the worst special teams gaffes that I think I've ever seen from Caleb Johnson in that Pittsburgh game.
Griffin, I know you try to listen to the show while you're doing everything else. Do you remember what I talked about at the beginning of last Monday's show, where I tied together the Browns, the Jets, and the Bears?
Oh, yeah. You know, they're teams that love giving their fan bases a bunch of hope before the year starts just for it to crush us. Week one, week two, as a Bears fan, I'm feeling it. You're not wrong, Steve.
The Bears were dreadful yesterday. I want to talk about them with Gary Lawless in a couple minutes. Jets were awful. And their quarterback out of concussion. And going into the year, Jeff, I was actually thinking, you know, I think the Bears can turn the corner. Maybe they can get to 8-9 wins. They can still get there. And it's bad enough that I have, like, a little morsel of hope every year with the Jets. But for some reason, I'm a Browns stan. And yesterday, I'm like, hey, you know what, the Ravens, they can stay within hailing distance of the Ravens. And I look up, and I think it was 20-3 at that point. Ravens are up, and they're dealing Browns plus 19.5, like, in the second quarter. And I'm like, you know they're going to stay in this one. They got it to 20-10, and then it was just friggin' rushing, awful mistakes. Flacco looked terrible. One thing that I liked, and I don't mention fantasy football a lot, but I kind of need this guy to come through because I like getting a snitch at the end of the draft. But Quinshon Judkins actually kind of looked decent. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, Derrick Henry didn't do anything. He didn't do a damn thing in the game. 22 yards rushing, and the Browns get just run off the field.
Yeah, that's the point. Derrick Henry, 11 for 23, and you still lose by 25 and give up 42 points to Baltimore. You know, I thought that was a tricky spot for the Ravens, too, even though it was the home opener and it's a division game. And historically, they don't play the Browns that well, and it was like, oh, even preflop, 12.5. Wow, that feels like a lot of points. I'm happy I stayed out of it, but boy, that was a very ugly last two quarters for Cleveland yesterday. And the Browns are kind of the same boat as the Saints to me. They're going to be 3-4 wins bad. They just have nothing on offense.
Hold on a second. They've got hope at quarterback. I didn't watch First Take this morning. I assume they did at least an hour on Dylan Gabriel over Shadur Sanders and how mad they are. Gabriel threw a touchdown pass, so I was glad to see that. And to your point about kind of a weird spot for the Ravens, you know, emotional letdown. They can kind of beat the Browns with their eyes closed. They do have Monday Night Football coming up against the Lions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, now, I don't know about you, but I don't give up on teams after week one. I wasn't in panic mode with the Lions. Lions looked pretty good against the Bears yesterday, so I think they're going to be okay. I didn't believe over the summer that they were going to be the same sort of team they were a year ago with 14 wins, but they're still going to be very dangerous. And man, if the offense can hum like that, do we know the condition of Amon-Ra St. Brown?
I haven't seen anything.
We'll check
today,
on that one. Yeah. He had a monster day, and then I saw him. He looked like he got shot in a hamstring.
You know, I'll just say this with Detroit. When they are inside, there is not a better offense in the NFL. When you bring them outside, and this is why it was so, again, even though I liked the Commanders in that playoff game last year, to see them get wiped out like they did was such a stunner in their own building, because they are the prototypical perfect indoor football team the way they're constructed. And I didn't take anything from their week one loss. It was the first game with two new coordinators, and you know what, the Packers might just be really damn good. That might just be what it is with Green Bay.
So I was hanging out in a book yesterday with all the games on, and I didn't even think of this one because you looked at me with Amon-Ra and you're like, what are you talking about? Headline: Lions Amon-Ra St. Brown fakes injury as Detroit runs it up on the Bears. He did his fake hand.
There you go.
And when I saw it, I was like, whoa, my God. I think that thing tore off the bone. He's shaking it. You SOB.
Oh, man.
He got me.
15-yard penalty.
I'll throw the flag on him. Okay, and then the other one, I knew this was like a schmuck play. Because, again, even though it didn't work out with the Jets, on the field, I'm kind of an Aaron Rodgers stan, and I do think the Steelers are going to have a good season, but again, their defense didn't look good. A-Rodge didn't look that great. I laid the 3 with the Steelers, and I'll admit, I have a lot of concerns about Sam Darnold, and he was a lot better than he was in game number 1, but Seattle, I mean, there were mistakes by the Steelers. You can't, poor Caleb Johnson. That's unreal. Dude, know the rules.
Yeah. That was
an Iowa education.
That was.
That's a needless shot, the one out.
That's hard. Well, look, for someone like me with a Missouri education, I can't say anything. But, you know, I'll say this with the Johnson play. It was just stunning that a Steeler made that mistake, because usually special teams, they never make mistakes with that unit. Their mistakes are coming from their quarterbacks making silly throws. But you know what? I would have made that same bet as you. At 3, the Steelers, Rodgers' first home game, that defense can't possibly be as bad as it was week 1 against the Jets. It was not quite as bad, but it was bad again. And, you know, I think I said it earlier, Seattle's got an A-plus defense, and they showed it yesterday again. And their whole season's going to come down with Sam Darnold turn the ball over too much in order for them to win 8, 9, 10 games.
30 seconds. If I made you, you have to put a bet on one of these teams for the AFC Championship to win it. You have to. Steelers 22-1, Bengals 28-1.
Between the two of them, I would still take Cincinnati, and I hope Burrow comes back.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I have the. I still think the Steelers are a 7-10 team. I think Rodgers is done. Still think he is.
Damn. All right. Well, this will be an ongoing saga between the two of us because I picked him to win 10 or 11 games. I thought it was a great upgrade with Aaron Rodgers. But yesterday did not look good at all. If you play in, you know, pro pick'em contests like the William Hill, I signed up for it. I have my girlfriend doing it. She loves these contests. It's been I don't want to, like, brag about her or also downgrade how she's done. I think she went 11-2 yesterday and 23-5.
It's pretty
overall
good
so far. But the thing is, in those kind of contests, you got to go 15-0.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking through week one standings, and I'm like, oh, 14 people went 15-0. So I told her, I'm like, hey, they got a big bonus. You know, if you hit, like, 73%, 75%, shoot for that one. Make sure you sign up for the new William Hill or sign up for a new William Hill Nevada mobile sports account. You can earn up to a $250 bonus bet after placing your first qualifying wager. William Hill Nevada mobile sports app allows you to bet on the iPhone, the iPad, Android device, or anywhere in the state of Nevada. They've got a great deep wagering menu, same game parlays, early cash out, live in-play wagering, and all the major sports. For information, especially on the full service books that you need to get into to sign up for the app, go on the web to williamhill.us. It's the William Hill Nevada mobile sports account.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
10-7, Texans on top. Raiders coming up, 7 o'clock kickoff against the Chargers. We're hanging out here in the front yard. You heard it. Jeff Parles in on Cofield and Company. Willie Ramirez out here most of the Mondays, but Willie and other staffers from ESPN Las Vegas, like Adam Hill, are over at Allegiant covering the thing. Big pregame shindig for all Raiders games. Goes down on Raider Nation Radio 920, our sister station, R&R 920. So you and I really didn't get to talk much about the fight. You thought it was 10-2. I had an 8-4, but I was also scoring in mind in close rounds. I gave them to Canelo. I could have easily had it 9-3. Now, that said, the 10-2, you tell me. The 9-3 for me was not like Crawford destroyed him. He was more precise, more accurate, a little more volume. And then I... You know what, the optics at the end of the fight, if the 12th round had been close, Canelo had no shot, because I've seen this happen in a few fights, and especially, not fights like this, but fights where one opponent in the middle or towards the end of the fight is like, damn it, like I can't see the punches coming. Like I'm just, he was like turning around, looking all frustrated, getting hit by jabs, and that's never good to do with the judges.
No, not at all. Not at all. And you know, I'll just say this, it was... It wasn't a domination by any stretch, but it was clear watching the whole fight who the better fighter was. For, again, I had a 10-2. I could see your 8-4. I thought set, like, the fact that that on two of the scorecards, Crawford had to win round 12 in order to make it a unanimous decision is a little bit crazy.
I had a tied through 8. It could have been 5-3 Crawford. So he needed to close strong, and then I had him winning all four rounds, 9-12.
Yep.
Now, on the question Steve Kim asked earlier, Steve Kim's one of our boxing guys. Steve asked earlier, like, hey, do we want to see the fight again? Well, one, I'm very over-the-top pro-Vegas. So, yes, I want to see the fight again because, yep, I think it can make big money. I think it could be a big promotion. I don't think there's any chance they would do it at Allegiant again. I think they'll move it inside to T-Mobile. Hell, maybe the Sphere. I don't know.
I can put it at MGM,
too. And then at that point, like, the starting tickets are $7,000 and $100,000. It would make so much freaking money. So that's good for Vegas. Bring a big crowd in, have people watching all over the city at different satellite locations. But on a rematch being interesting, yeah, you know, I'm going to buy into the fact that I don't think Canelo's fight plan was very good. That said, I don't believe he's an old 35. I think he could fight a lot more aggressively and fight the kind of fight he needs to, Jeff, and that is close space, try to fight more on the phone booth, try to get it on the ropes. The few times he got Crawford in the corner, he let him out pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing for Canelo. His style recently has been, hey, throw 250 or 300 punches during a fight. You got to throw a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe deep down he knows, like, I don't have it anymore. But I would be intrigued to see, like, hey, make it more of a rough and tough fight and mix it up more, throw more volume, and maybe we have something here.
Well, 100% with you. He has to, if we get it again, and I'm pro, do it again, Do it again 9 months from now. Why not? Let's just get it. Doesn't
Crawford have to do this fight? I'll reference Steve Kim. He's our boxing expert. And Steve said, he's made plenty of money. Well, has he made $60 million?
No.
For this fight, he got $10 million, and then he was probably back-end bonus, whatever. These are big numbers. Maybe he made $15 or $20 million. The other guy made $150 million.
Yeah.
Don't you want that money?
You could fight three more times.
And probably get, $60 for the next Canelo fight. Fight beyond that at 160, or collect more belts, fight other top competition. This guy has a chance to make, there's $75 million when he hasn't sniffed that.
All right, you could even be lowballing it at $75 million. I'm with you, but I just think, and Steve made this point, Canelo just has so much wear and tear on him. If we get this fight again, unless if Canelo comes out and controls the tempo of the pace of the fight quickly, it would be similar to what we just saw.
We're going to go to break on this. Something that I hated was the end of the fight with Kellerman asking them both about retirement with this anointment of, GOAT. Career achievement has been done. No. He's 38. He looks like he's 30. There's plenty of guys to fight. I don't want to do the boxing needs it, but it kind of does. And for his legacy, I think there's more to accomplish. Come on, Bud Crawford. He's not going to walk away, but this is my plea. Please keep fighting.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
Early second quarter, 10-7 Texans. Bucks have the ball, though. Gary Lawless sits down with us from VGK. He's a big football guy. He's working with Boomers. We'll get into Boomers in a couple of minutes. And first thing you said when you sat down was, not a whole lot of defense being played so far.
No, there was a good play just there by the Texans, but 10-7 already. Should have got the over on that early. I think it was 142. It's climbed up since then. But I watched a whole bunch of football yesterday. Denver, can't believe they blew that game.
Well, let's talk about the end of the game.
Yeah. How do they call that penalty?
What do you think, Jeff?
They got it right. I hate the call, but they did get it right.
I don't disagree that they got...
It has nothing
to do with the game, and it's the last play of the game.
It decides the game. You know what the most ridiculous thing in the whole sequence, though, and it gets wiped away because of that penalty? Shane Steichen settled for a 60-yard field goal with a kid who had no chance of getting it there from 60 yards.
I was watching. I'm like, what are you doing here?
It's crazy.
Throw the ball on third down.
Totally bizarre. The whole thing was totally bizarre because I thought Indy played an amazing game. Jones has been awesome, but, boy, kind of like just an empty feeling at the end, even with the win for Indianapolis.
Yeah, what did you think of the play calling in the Eagles-Chiefs game? I get why you would go for the onside kick because it gives you another chance to get the ball back. But you give Saquon Barkley the ball at the 40-yard line, the game's over.
Well, more importantly, and we touched on it earlier, You get them in a situation where you know you're going to see the tush push at least once and probably twice, and you saw it thrice in that sequence.
And so I found it interesting. Who was the official analyst working for the network?
Well, was that Blandino on that game or was it Pereira?
No. It was Pereira.
I don't think it was Pereira either, but I heard that.
But said right away, it's impossible to officiate. And then you watch the replay, it could have been a fumble. They didn't call it.
Can I tell you, when the official said that, I hated that with every fiber of my
being. Why is that?
Because whether they're current officials or past officials, I don't care about their opinion on what the rules are and what they have to police. I think they've done too much of that. Gary, realize, a couple of years ago, they actually gave the coaches an option of looking at PIs.
Yeah.
The SOBs and the officials group would not call it. They wouldn't overturn it. They overturned less than 10%. They basically told the NFL, your rule is crap. We're not going to apply this. We're not going to make the guys look bad by overturning it. So I still have that fresh in my mind. And when that guy said it, I get it. It's a hard play to officiate.
They have it in the Canadian Football League. And they have
the PI.
Yeah.
It's awesome, right?
Yeah. It's the Grey Cup, which is the Super Bowl of the Canadian Football League, it got decided. They threw a challenge late in the game And it was an interception. The offensive coach challenged for PI. They called the PI. They took the interception off the board. They ran the ball in. They won the championship.
Oh, my goodness. It is.
That's in like, that's before I came to Vegas. So it's like, 2012, 2013. But they use it all the time.
It's outrageous how many times in the NFL that questionable PI calls affect the game, especially because it's not the college rule where you get 15 yards. You can get freaking 60.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And the officials are like completely defiant. Yeah. So I get it. What do you think is going to happen with this post? Because I believe they're close this year. It's out.
It's out. They're going to get rid of it. Yeah, just the fact that you have, like those rules analysts, I actually love them. And I love them.
I like them too. I
love them
in
hockey. I love them in hockey. The guy Dave Jackson, the guy that does it for ESPN, Dave Jackson is, he was a great ref, and he's worked really hard at up on the rule book. He spent a ton of time continuing to work with the officials. And then in hockey, they have they call the Situation Room. It's in Toronto. He goes there all the time. He knows what they're looking for. So when he speaks, it's like an active ref is talking about it. I've seen some that are terrible that have not, it's like anything. If you don't do your homework and don't stay up to date, you're going to suck. So he doesn't. He's been excellent. And as soon as that guy said that last night, I was like, now I had money on the game. So,
a little emotion.
Yeah, for sure. No, but yeah, it's amazing. And the college football, because there are so many games, some of those games are the officiating is awful. Like, it's like the NFL is the creme de la creme, and then the top end college football games, you have really good referees.
Man.
But when you get down to Old Dominion versus, Cracker Barrel, it's not very good.
Well, you had some games early on with UNLV where they're playing Idaho State. You don't know what the officials are in that game, and then there's no TV replays. So there are a couple of that happens. I didn't think we were going to get into the officials, and I don't like beating up on them because I try to stay even-keeled. And like, I'll give a good example.
It's funny. I won't say anything bad about a hockey referee.
Yeah.
I'll trash umpires.
Football.
I'll trash football. Soccer. Soccer, they're the worst, man.
Well, we went crazy for years over Joey Crawford, and then we actually had a chance to meet him, and we're like, this guy's a sweetheart. He's a smart guy, and you're like, okay, I get it. But I'm going to bring up a college game to you. I don't know if you guys both watch this. Texas A&M winds up beating Notre Dame at the end. Notre Dame had at risk tens of millions of dollars.
Sure.
I'm not a Notre Dame fan, and they're going to be okay without the money. I still think they can make a run.
Yeah.
There was a clear tackle
Blayden.
In the middle of the line to save Reed's Keister by a Texas A&M interior lineman, and they don't throw the flag.
No.
And you're like, guys, come on. Now, that leverage is one thing. That is a tackle on a winning touchdown.
Yeah.
And
it's in hockey, they've put in the offside challenge, and it sucks because now, now the skate blade, it's a millimeter. That's not the spirit of what they wanted. So there's too much. I think tennis has done a nice job. Like when the ball is out and you get that beep or whatever, it's out or it's on the line or whatever. I don't mind it, but you hear this argument all the time. Well, like, human error is part of the game.
Why?
Why?
We can see the human error now more than ever. They're getting embarrassed by replay and tech.
I'm not the smartest guy on the block, but I'm smart enough to talk and listen to people. And this guy was telling me, oh, the refereeing was better in the 1970s.
Oh my God.
And I listen to that, and I'm like, those guys all smoked. They all looked like me. They couldn't run up and down the basketball court or the football field or skate with the players. How is it better? And people now, because of, you can watch the game on your iPad and freeze it. You can do all these things. Like, their mistakes are magnified. The players are all looking at iPads on the benches. They know when the referee makes a mistake. So why would a league want to hang those people out to dry? Why wouldn't they want to support them and give them an opportunity to get it right as often as possible?
Well, and that's the thing that makes it so odd that baseball has been so slow with the ABS system too. Where,
well, but Jeff, who has this? Which union with the officials is the strongest?
Oh, well, that's what I'd say for everything baseball. With baseball, of course.
But to Gary's point, like you're just setting yourself up to get embarrassed. They're not going to replace you. Right. They're going to replace you.
Well, and now
and there's nothing wrong with it. Sometimes you make mistakes.
We're looking at the screen. Odds powered by FanDuel. Right, you've got all of these, like, you're taking in millions and millions of dollars in sponsorship money from gambling sites.
Yep.
You're asking people to have a vested financial and rooting interest in your games, and then you're not going to get it right.
When,
like, there was, I lost some money on a college game on the weekend, and you know, there was a call early in the game, and I said to myself,
"That's gonna get
like,
me."
I'm like, you cannot bet some of these college games because you're a better referee than the guy on the field.
Yes. Well, the amazing thing,
that's a little bit of a hyperbole, but
yeah, a little bit.
You know what I'm saying?
When these partnerships first started to emerge, the leagues were like, "We need an integrity fee," and I remember on the air we were like, wait, integrity? I think you better be real careful, pro sports leagues, when you're officiating.
Yeah.
I've mentioned integrity, because people are going to bring that. I bring it up all the time. Gary Lawless is with us. All right, so you're working with Boomers.
Yeah.
I opened my account on Saturday. I came over after doing a morning show. And I got to tell you, Vegas, we're still trying to kind of catch up and streamlining things. These guys get it. I worked with Warren, the supervisor, on Saturday over at the book here at Ellis Island, and it was like less than 7 minutes. There was no paperwork, all on the phone.
The app is great.
Freaking awesome.
So you download the app right now at home. You know, do everything you need to do. Then you come here to fund it and to get verified. And now, you know, and sooner or later you'll be able to fund it wherever you are. But, like, everybody lives close to a CVS or a Walmart, or, you know, you can just go in there and they've got that Pay Near Me app, and you can, hopefully you don't have to ever go fund it. Hopefully you fund it once and you're a winner forever. And but yeah, it's really easy to use, and I'm not a big, my units are very small, so it's, you know what I mean, like, I can go to sleep at night and I don't have to worry about it. It's really fun, and you should bet responsibly. But it's my wife said to me the other day, why are you watching college football? I had never watched college football. I did when I was a kid growing up, but living in Canada, I just didn't watch a lot of it. And now I'm, every Saturday, I'm like trying to watch all these games. And she's like, why do you care? And I'm like, Boomers.
Well, it spices thing up.
Yeah.
A bunch. Gary Lawless, Jeff Parles, Cofield down here at Ellis Island. As we mentioned, Boomer Sportsbook is here. It's at Casino Valley Verde. Have you hung out at the front yard before?
I have been here. I think this is my third or fourth time here. It's a great place. Like, all the screens, the bar, the staff. The food here is dynamite. I just had a couple of wings. They were really good. It's great people here. Good.
Breaking up your rhythm.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I'm just going to say, I'm going to say one word to you. When you come down here, anything that has bacon, get bacon. You can actually just order bacon on its own.
All right.
Breakfast is available all the time. This place is dynamite, and we're going to have a real good crowd here for the Raiders and the Chargers later on. We got about a minute left here. Before we get to the 5 o'clock hour, and Gary's going to stick with us, give me your read a couple hours out from Chargers and Raiders.
You know, the Raiders have, obviously, there's some new energy there with Pete Carroll, and got the win on the road last week. I love that. And I love the Chargers. I think the Raiders have got a real chance to keep it close, and then if somebody can make a play late, they got a chance to win.
Do you like the Chargers? Not necessarily in the game, but in general.
Long term?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, long term. Not right now.
Long term. I mean, they have a top three coach in the NFL in Jim Harbaugh. And And Herbert is still, even with that horrible playoff game, Herbert's still awesome. So
top
yeah.
three coach.
Yeah.
So who's number one?
Still Andy Reid, but he's yeah. his grasp of number one is starting to fade though.
And number two.
See, this is where it gets tough because Kyle Shanahan's my number two, but he can't win the big one.
What about the guy running the Eagles?
Well, they wanted to throw him into the Schuylkill last year at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, he looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, he's pretty darn good himself. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I Jim Harbaugh is not my number three. I actually like John better than Jim.
Good.
Really? Okay, we're gonna build on that because I saw something in week one. If John doesn't change his tune on this, they're not gonna win a Super Bowl even with Lamar Jackson. They gotta correct it. Ellis Island Front Yard. We got football, two games with Cofield and Company. Come on down, take advantage of the all you can eat, all you can drink.